Ada's second letter. A fortnight back, we printed a neatly written and admirably expressed letter from a Crewe factory girl, and we requested the writer to supply us with additional details about her work. Sir, in your issue of the 5th of May, you were good enough to publish a letter of mine on the above subject, and also to invite me to write you further on our wages, hours of work and conditions of employment. Before responding to the send, I have waited in the hope that an abler pen than mine might take up my subject and say a word on our behalf. I conclude, however, that sufficient interest is not taken in factory girls and their wrongs outside their own sphere to call for any comment. Speaking for ourselves, sir, I can assure you that this question of prices paid for our work and the general inadequacy of the same in proportion to the work done is one naturally of keen interest and forms the subject of constant discussion and complaint. Entirely amongst ourselves, please take note, sir. Notwithstanding this genteel, private discontent, we unfortunately, as a body, regard the existing state of things as inevitable and have not sufficient courage and do not know how, if we had, to make a resolute stand against the injustice done to us. I feel my position, sir, in this matter of giving information, to be one of peculiar difficulty. On the one hand, to be quite fair to myself and to those I am endeavouring to represent, I ought and would like to describe fully and explicitly the exact kind of work done by us, the exact amount of it, and the exact price paid for that amount, and to give my own experience without reserve. But on the other hand, were I to do this, I should be making revelations which would lead to instant recognition by many people of the particular factory in which I am employed, and probably also, sir, to the identification of your correspondent, which I shall do well to avoid. And therefore, on that account, I feel reluctance to reveal them, greatly as I value this opportunity which you, sir, have so kindly given me of emphasising, for it must already be known, the fact that we are suffering from a great evil which stands in urgent need of redressing. However, I think that even within the limits to which I shall have to restrict myself, I can make good the statements contained in my first letter. I must explain before proceeding further that I shall speak of the branch of factory work known as finishing only. I have reason to believe that the other branches of female employment are not overpaid, but I shall speak only of what I know to be actual fact with regard to wages. We are paid not by the hour or day, but a certain sum per garment. Wages, then, vary greatly. For instance, many different classes of work have to be done and different prices are paid. Not at all, however, in proportion to the amount of work to be done. For while one price may yield as much as threepence an hour, occasionally, another will yield just one and a halfpenny an hour, quite frequently, working equally hard for each sum. Of course, all classes of work have to be done, and we have to accept with gratitude or otherwise whatever someone, our employer presumably, thinks is right to give us. We are doing excellently when earning threepence an hour. We not infrequently work for one and a halfpenny an hour. An average of about twopence for the average hand may be taken as fair. Occasionally, we may get work which will yield us as much as fourpence halfpenny, but it is very special occasion and it may be passed by in silence, otherwise of course we would have no cause for complaint. And now, to take an average of a year's wage of the average ordinary hand, which was the class I mentioned in my first letter, and being that which is, in a majority, may be taken as fairly representative. The wages of such a hand, sir, will barely average, but by exercise of imagination, 8 shillings a week. I ought to say, too, that there is a minority, which is also considerable, whose wages will not average above 5 shillings a week. I would impress upon you that this is making the very best of this case, and is over rather than understating. What do you think of it, Mr. Editor, for a living wage? I wish some of those, whoever they may be, who mete it out to us, would try to live on it for a few weeks, as the factory girl has to do 52 weeks in a year, to pay board and lodgings and provide herself decent boots and clothes to stand all weathers, to pay an occasional doctor's bill, literature and a holiday away from the scope of her daily drudging, for which even the factory girl has the audacity to long for sometimes, but has quite as often to do without. Not to speak of provision for old age, when eyes have grown too dim to thread the everlasting needle and to guide the worn fingers over the accustomed task. Yet this is a question which some of us at least ought to face, ignore it as we may, and are compelled to do. The census showing such a large preponderance of women over men in this country, it follows that the factory girl must inevitably contribute her quota to the ranks of old maidenhoods. But she never so willingly to have it otherwise. And now, as to the number of hours worked to earn, or rather to get, this magnificent sum. I explained in my first letter that we are subject to fluctuation as to the amount of work supplied us. In other words, that we have busy seasons and slack ones. It follows then that in busy seasons, to total up to the yearly average I have given, we make good wages and, of course, work a proportionately long number of hours, and in slack season, bad wages. Now, sir, our working day, that is, in the factory, consists of 9 to 10 hours. Take out of this time, often considerable and unavoidably so, to obtain the work, to obtain the trimmings and the materials to do it, and then to get it passed and booked into us when done, and then calculate how much, say we are getting tuppence an hour, we shall be able to earn in an ordinary working day in the factory. It will be plain that in order to average this wage, we have in busy seasons to work longer than the actual time in the factory. Homework, then, is the only resource of the poor slave who has the misfortune to adopt finishing as a means of earning a livelihood. I have myself repeatedly 5 nights a week, besides Sunday afternoons, for weeks at a time, regularly taken 4 hours at least work home with me, and have done it. This too, after a close, hard day's work in the factory. In giving my own experience, I give that of us all. We are obliged to do it, sir, to earn this living wage. It would be unnecessary to point out how fearfully exhausting and tedious it is to sit boring at the same thing for 14 to 18 hours a day at a stretch. Meal times excepted, of course. But we are not asking for pity, sir. We ask for justice. Surely it would not be more than just to pay us as such a rate that we could realise a living wage, in the true sense of words. In a reasonable time, say one present working day of from 9 to 10 hours, till the 8-hour day comes general, and reaches even factory girls. Our work is necessary, presumably, to our employers. Were we not employed, others would have to be. And if of the opposite sex, I venture to say, sir, would have to be paid on a very different scale. Why? Because we are weak women, without pluck and grit enough to stand up for our rights, should we be ground down to this miserable wage? With regard to the conditions of our employment, those of which I can speak leave nothing to be desired. In the particular factory in which I am employed, we work in greatest freedom and comfort, and I should like to add that as far as I personally am concerned, from those in immediate authority over me, I have never received anything but consideration and courtesy. In conclusion, sir, I'm aware that in writing these letters to you, I am probably doing what I was reading of the other day, namely, butting my head against a stone wall. But as the writer I am quoting went on to say, how can one be sure it is a stone wall, or one made only of paper, unless one does butt one's head against it? Now I am quite sanguine enough to think that the wall against which I am butting my head will give way at least with my solitary butt. Nevertheless, sir, I am determined to butt my head against it. Indeed, I feel it to be personally degrading and a disgrace upon me to remain silent and submit without a protest to the injustice done me. And if the wall is of stone, sir, and the only remedy lies in the radical one recommended by the minority report of the Labour Commission, then will you allow me to urge upon your readers, upon those of my own sex, who, though not yet having the privilege of voting themselves, yet have influence with those who have, to use that influence intelligently. In their power, with the utmost possible speed, to relieve the burden of the oppressed and suffering workers of this country. Not least amongst them are the factory girls of Crewe.